I hope you had a great weekend and a great Lord's Day, and that you're ready to dive back into our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Today we're going to turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 22, where we will pick up our story in verse number 12. Now there's a parallel in 2 Kings 11 that you should be aware of as well. This is the story so far. Jehu had been anointed at the command of God by one of the prophets under Elisha to execute judgment against the house of Ahab by assassinating Jehoram, the king of northern Israel, and all of the blood relatives that had a right to that throne. And so Jehu had killed not just simply Jehoram of the north, he had also killed Jehoram's nephew, King Ahaziah of the south. And then Jehu had killed Jezebel, the widow of King Ahab. And then all of the other relatives of this Omride dynasty, the dynasty that Ahab came from. So the northern Israel kingdom has been purged of the bloodline of Ahab. In southern Judah, the moment that the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, Athaliah, the queen mother, the widow of Jehoram of the south, and the mother of King Ahaziah, who has just been killed up in the north, as soon as she found out about all this, she started wiping out all the royal family in the south. Nobody knows for sure what she had in mind, but it's possible that she wanted everyone with claims to the throne of northern Israel and southern Israel, except for herself, to be gone out of the picture. Maybe she thought she could begin her own dynasty. Well, that happened in a way that allowed one little baby to survive. Because the aunt, the sister of the late king of southern Judah, rescued her nephew out of the place where all the princes were kept and took him away into the temple complex where she hid him away because she happens to be married to the high priest Jehoiada. And Jehoiada keeps his nephew, the royal seed of David, safe and secreted away in the temple for the next 6 years. Now we're ready for 2 Chronicles 22:12. It says that he remained with them 6 years, hidden in the house of God, while Athaliah reigned over the land. Chapter 23. But in the seventh year, that's the seventh year of Athaliah, which is going to be right around 846 BC, I think, that we're talking about. And probably we're talking about this happening at the time of the seventh month when the kingdom of Judah was celebrating all its renewal holidays and the transfer from one year to the next. The cycle of the kings, the cycle of the land, all of that kind of came to a close at the end of the sixth month. And so the seventh month kicked off with the Feast of Trumpets. And then the Yom Kippur ceremony on the 10th day. And then the Feast of Tabernacles happening on the 15th. So it was a really big national month. Very important. And so I believe that everything that we're about to read took place in that particular month. It says that in the seventh year, Jehoiada, that's the high priest, took courage, and more than likely he's being guided by God's Holy Spirit. And he entered into a covenant with the commanders of hundreds, Azariah, the son of Jeroham, Ishmael, the son of Jehohanan, Azariah, the son of Obed, Messiah, the son of Adiah, and Elshaphat, the son of Zikri. So he goes to the military, and he starts making secret plans with them. And it says in the 2 Kings that he specifically went to the Karaites and to the guards of the palace and the temple. Now the Karaites, they are the sworn royal bodyguard. And so more than likely over the last 6 years, these guys, none of them in the military or in the bodyguard, have been happy that they are left supporting a daughter of King Ahab and King Jezebel from the north, who has killed off all of the royal seed so that she can maintain her own power upon this throne in Judah. So when Jehoiada high the priest comes to them, they are very much prepared for what he wants to do. Back to our 2 Chronicles 23 passage, verse 2. These guys went about through Judah, and they gathered the Levites from all the cities of Judah and the heads of fathers' houses of Israel, and they came to Jerusalem. Now, they are targeting not just the military leaders, but they're also targeting the religious leaders, because more than likely, Athaliah was raised to worship Baal and Asherah, and now that she is in control in southern Judah, that is her preferred worship. And the Levites are kind of on the outs with her. And the temple has probably also suffered under her leadership. So verse 3 says, all the assembly made a covenant with the king in the house of God. Because what happens is, Jehoiada gathers these guys together, and then he shows them a little boy, 7 years old, that is the heir to the throne, the legitimate heir to the throne. Up to this moment, they all thought there was no one left from the genuine house of David. They believed that the line had been wiped out, which is sad because that means that they did not have faith in God's promise that there would always be a seed of David to sit upon the throne. So they make a covenant with the assistance of Jehoiada the high priest in the name of God with the young king. Jehoiada said to them, behold the king's son, let him reign as he who is spoke concerning the sons of David. This is the thing that you shall do. Of you, priests and Levites, who come off duty on the Sabbath, one-third shall be gatekeepers, one-third shall be at the king's house, and one-third shall be at the gate of the fountain. So the way things worked at the capital city, both with the military and with the religious leaders, the religious workers, the new week started on the first day of the week, what we call Sunday. And the crews that were getting ready to come on duty would arrive by Friday, so that they could spend the Sabbath at the place where they would start working on Sunday. And those that were getting ready to go off duty, they would participate in the Sabbath ceremonies, and then the next day, Sunday, they would be off duty and they would leave. Well, Jehoiada tells them, you're going to have special assignments. I want a third of you guys getting ready to go off duty to assemble as watchers at the gates. And I want another third of you to go to the palace. And I want another third of you to go down by the gate that leads to the Gihon Fountain. The Gihon Spring was the natural spring on the east side of the ancient city of David, the ancient city of Salem, the ancient city of Jebus. It was walled in and provided fresh water for this capital city. And it was also used in ceremonies related to the inauguration of a king. So he wants all the key places secured. And then he says, all the people shall be in the courts of the house of he who is. So he's timing this in such a way that there are going to be tons of people at the temple. All the common people, even though they are not aware of the really big event that's going to happen on this day. This is another reason why I think it's probably either happening on the Feast of Trumpets, the first day of the month, or possibly the first day of Feast of Tabernacles on the 15th when there was a full moon. So here's his instructions some more. Verse number 6. Let no one enter the house of he who is except the priests and the ministering Levites. They may enter, for they are holy, but all the people shall keep the charge of he who is. So keep the temple shrine area free of ceremonial contamination. He wants this to be a very holy ceremony. Verse 7, the Levites shall surround the king, each with his weapons in his hand, and whoever enters the house shall be put to death. Be with the king when he comes in and when he goes out. So some of the Levites are, of course, security personnel. And they are going to be the holy escort for the king when he enters the temple complex, because he will take his oath of office, his oath of the throne, there between the two pillars in front of the temple shrine building. Remember that those temple bronze pillars have names. Yakin, Boaz. And you put those two words together and it forms a sentence. He shall establish in strength. And so it's been the custom for each of the kings to stand before those pillars, or between them, near one of them in particular, and acknowledge that his kingdom is going to be established in strength by God himself. More than likely, Jehoiada has been working with this young king, Jehoash, to accomplish something else that's supposed to happen when he sits upon the throne. And that is, he has to make a personal hand copy of either the book of Deuteronomy or possibly the entire five books of Moses. The book of the law was what Moses insisted that each king was going to have to hand copy. And then he was supposed to keep this personal copy in his own handwriting next to his throne and read from it every single day of his reign. And so Jehoiada has probably been working with Jehoash on that as well. On to the next part, verse number 8 of 2 Chronicles 23. The Levites and all Judah did according to all that Jehoiada the priest commanded, and they each brought his man, and who were to go off duty on the Sabbath, with those who were to come on duty on the Sabbath, for Jehoiada the priest did not dismiss the divisions. So he tells everybody, all of you are going to remain on duty for the next big ceremony that's going to occur. And Jehoiada the priest gave to the captains the spears and the large and the small shields that had been King David's, which were in the house of God. And he set all the people as a guard for the king, every man with his weapon in his hand, from the south side of the house to the north side of the house, around the altar and the house. So they are all over the forecourt on both sides of the porch area where these two pillars are located. Then they brought out the king's son, and they put the crown on his head, and they gave him the testimony. Now that's the written word of God. So he has either hand copied it himself already, and this is his hand copy, that he's basically going to take an oath that he will live by, or it is the copy that he will make his hand copy from once he has been declared king. And so they proclaimed him king, and Jehoiada and his sons anointed him, and they said, "Long live the king!" And so all this ceremony happens, and a great shout goes up from the people that realize that there was still one more surviving son of the line of David, that he's 7 years old, and that he has taken the oath of office, and that he is their legitimate king, and not this usurper princess from the north. But the moment that Athaliah hears all of this celebration going on, she knows that something's up. Verse 12. When Athaliah heard the noise of the people running and praising the king, she went into the house of he who is to the people. So she goes into the temple complex and into the forecourt from her palace. Verse 13, when she looked, there was the king standing by his pillar at the entrance. So that's a reference to Yakin and Boaz, the two pillars. He is standing by one of them in particular, by the entrance to the shrine building, having just taken the oath. The captains and the trumpeters were beside the king, and all the people of the land rejoicing and blowing trumpets, and the singers with their musical instruments leading in the celebration. So everybody is excited. It is a monstrous moment in Judean history, but not for Athaliah. Athaliah tore her clothes and she cried out, "Treason! Treason!" Because she thought she had established herself well as the only possible king or queen, in her case, of the two kingdoms. And Jehoiada, the priest, brought out the captains who were set over the army, saying to them, "Bring her out between the ranks, and anyone who follows her is to be put to death with the sword." So he gives the order to arrest her and anyone that's in her entourage to be immediately executed. For the priest said, "Do not put her to death in the house of he who is." So no death is to take place within the holy precincts. So they laid hands on her, and she went out into the entrance of the horse gate of the king's house, and they put her to death there. So they take her to one of the exits of the city that has something to do with horses, so probably stables were located there, and that is where she is executed, and the end of the Omrid dynasty, that is the dynasty of Omri in the northern kingdom, who was her grandfather. So Jehoiada then made a covenant between himself and all the people and the king that they should be he who is his people. So we're now going to have a renewal of the covenant between Israel and he who is. Then all the people went to the house of Baal, which apparently had been built since Athaliah took power, and they tore it down. His altars and his images they broke in pieces, and they killed Matan, the priest of Baal, before the altars. So they're cleaning house, just like what Jehu did in the north 6 years earlier whenever he took power. He tricked all the Baal worshipers to show up at one event. He executed them all, and then he tore down the temple of Baal there at Samaria, and he returned it back to the worship of the golden calf images that were supposed to represent he who is. And that was a big problem. But down here in the south, they're doing it the right way. Verse 18, Jehoiada posted watchmen for the house of he who is under the direction of the Levitical priests and the Levites, whom David had organized to be in charge of the house of he who is, to offer burnt offerings to he who is, as it is written in the law of Moses, with rejoicing, with singing, according to the order of David. Now, we're looking at the 96th year of northern Israel, whenever this event is happening. And so that means that we're a good 120 years or so after the high point of Solomon's kingdom. And that means we're probably a good 140 years since the death of David, who gave Solomon all the plans for the temple complex and for the organization of those serving in the temple and of those serving at the capital city. So Jehoiada is going back to the original procedures given by King David about 140 years earlier. Verse 19, he stationed the gatekeepers at the gates of the house of he who is, so that no one should enter who was in any way unclean. So they are enforcing the strict rules of the Mosaic Code. If you've got a bodily issue, you are not allowed to proceed into the holy worship area of the temple. You could still worship, but you had to do it outside of that holy zone. So even if you had a snotty nose, you were supposed to stay out of that particular area. And so the gatekeepers are not just simply security for bad things happening, they are also evaluating the worshipers as they come in to make sure they're living up to the holy standard. Verse 20, he took the captains, the nobles, the governors of the people, and all the people of the land, and they brought the king down to the house of he who is, marching through the upper gate to the king's house, and they set the king on the royal throne. You remember Solomon's throne was a great big throne of ivory covered in gold. It had two full-sized lions right next to the throne, and then there were six steps that went down from the throne with 12 lions that provided the edges, the defining edge of each of those six steps. So they take him and they put him on that majestic throne of the kingdom. So here we have this little seven-year-old boy with the word of God in his hand, with the crown of David on his head. He is seated upon the throne of Solomon. And so all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet after Athaliah had been put to death with the sword. And that brings us then to chapter 24. Joash was 7 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. This is going to be one of the longest reigns in the southern kingdom. His mother's name was Zibiah of Beersheba. And Joash did what was right in the eyes of he who is all the days of Jehoiada the priest. Now I want you to pay attention to the wording there. He'll behave himself as long as his uncle, the high priest, is alive. Then we'll have a problem. Now we do have this little problematic verse, verse 3. Jehoiada got for him two wives, and he had sons and daughters. So I don't know what it's going to take for the Israelites in the royal family to figure this out, but God has a plan of one woman, one man together for a lifetime. And kings are not supposed to multiply wives to themselves. But the high priest himself goes ahead and arranges two marriages for this young man so that when he's old enough, he can get married and start having children. And so we will leave Jehoash at this point and let him grow up a bit and turn our attention to a little bit of material that has to take place up in the northern kingdom. And for this, I need you to turn to 2 Kings chapter number 8, verse number 7. And you remember that first Elijah and then Elisha were told that the kingdom of Damascus, Syria, had to have a change of administration. So now that's going to happen somewhere around 845, 844, 843, just a few years after the events we just talked about. 2 Kings 8, 7. Now Elisha came to Damascus. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, was sick. And it was told to him, the man of God has come here. And the king said to Hazael, one of his commanders, take a present with you, go meet the man of God, and inquire of he who is whether shall I recover from this sickness? So Hazael went to meet him and took a present with him, all kinds of goods of Damascus, 40 camels load. And when he came and stood before him, he said, your son Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, has sent me to you saying, shall I recover from this sickness? And Elisha said to him, you go, you say to him, you shall certainly recover. But he who is has shown me that he shall certainly die. And he fixed his gaze on him until he was embarrassed. And then the man of God wept. So Elisha is in Damascus, and he is visited by a commander, Hazael, who wants to know if his boss is going to get better. And Elisha says, you can tell him he will, but he's not going to.